Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Suhan, brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort. Jim, I wasn't feeling that well yesterday, so I didn't get a chance to talk to you about the Masters week and the fact that, you know, Scottie Scheffler just established that he really is the best player in the world. So I want to ask you, give me your overall impressions of the Masters in your week down there.
You know, I think I was telling Bill yesterday, I covered epic Masters and I've covered meh Masters, you know, watching Trevor Immelman just kind of, you know, ease to a victory was not the most exciting thing I've ever seen. I've seen collapses. I've seen all kinds of different Masters.
Yeah.
This was a pleasant Masters because, you know, the guys at the top of the leaderboard were all pretty good guys. None of them took the Saudi money. They're all, you know, three of the top players were Americans who have good reputations and are nice people. And it was just kind of Scottie Scheffler just going, okay, it's time for me to win this thing, and I'm going to keep making good shots, and you guys are each going to screw up on the back nine, and I'm just going to take command. And, you know, and yes, each of the other key competitors made a big mistake on the back nine, but they did so because Scheffler just kept on pouring it on, and they had to go for it on the 11th, which is an almost impossible hole to go for it on. Or they had to go for a birdie on 12 when you're a right-handed golfer. That's really risky. Mm-hmm. So Scheffler just wore people down.
Yeah, he did. You know, and a friend of mine and I were talking a couple days back out in the golf course, too, about guys trying to curve the ball, as you referenced, toward that back left pin location, curving it toward the water. And my friend said, I was always taught that you're not supposed to really curve the ball toward the water. And I said, well, they kind of have to go for it because of Scottie Scheffler.
That's exactly right. And that's why the back nine at the Masters is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've seen so many great golfers have to try incredible shots, and sometimes they pull it off, sometimes they don't, and often the tournament is decided there. The 11th hole for most players in most situations is a, you know, maybe hit the green, mm-hmm. but be happy if you leave it out to the right and chip and putt and make your par. Even be happy if you leave it out to the right and chip and two putt and make your bogey and just move on. But Scheffler kept on, you know, Scheffler, by just being relentless, made guys go for it on the 11th. He should never go for it on the 11th. You know, Ben Hogan always said, if I hit the green, I made a mistake, you know. That's just a brutally hard, long hole. The pond is there for a reason. It's to punish you if you go for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, you're supposed to make up your shots on 13 and 15. But, you know, Oberg and a couple of other guys felt like, oh, I got to go for it here, and it cost them.
You know, I absolutely love a golf tournament that tests the players. You know, I don't want to see them all shoot over par like we've had a couple of times in the U.S. Open. But high single digits below par, you know, which is just about where this was, 11 for Scheffler, 7 for anybody else, they made the greens firm enough that you couldn't just stick the green on a second shot on those par fives. I think they had one eagle on 15 all weekend, so they really made it a tough test.
They did, and 15, the green was incredibly sloped and incredibly mm-hmm. fast, and the winds really dried it out, which I think had a huge effect on it. You know, for me, I'd like to see I love the essence of risk and reward, and mm-hmm. to me, that's what Augusta National does.
The, yep.
You know, 12, 13, 15 especially. Those are risk-reward golf holes that can turn the tournament one way or the other. So I'd like to see – normally I would like to see 15 play a little more gettable. You know, I would like to see a few more eagles, because you know there are going to be some bad shots in there. I would like to see a few more eagles, but I just think the winds were so high they couldn't calm down the greens.
Yeah, man, it was certainly battling those winds. Anyway, a terrific event down there. WNBA draft last night, no surprise. Caitlin Clark goes number one overall. I don't know too much about the Lynx players. Can you enlighten us a little bit about their first-round pick, Peely?
Yeah, and it's really interesting. Cheryl had the 7th pick. She traded down to 8, mm-hmm. got a backup center from Chicago just to give her roster more size. But, you know, the interesting thing is here, if you wanted Angel Reese, she would have stayed at 7, and you would have gotten her.
Mm-hmm.
This was them saying, we don't want Angel Reese. We want an offensive player. Reese is a good defender and rebounder with a limited offensive game. And they obviously, you know, were okay not taking Angel Reese.
Mm-hmm.
And they go for a very talented, very strong, power forward type who can shoot it, who can get to the rim, who scored a lot of points against South Carolina this year, which is hard to do. You know, they really feel good about her offensive game. Can she defend? You know, is she quick enough to defend? Can she play a floor game? Those things need to be determined. But they feel like, you know, they at number 8, which is a position where not many players who, you know, contribute much in the WNBA because the rosters are stacked, feel like at number 8 at least they got somebody who has an offensive resume.
And can, you know, at least make the squad, right? I mean, you know, there is some of that. As you said, only 12 teams in the league. It really is tough to get into the league.
yeah, there are a lot of, very rarely do second round picks make WNBA rosters, and we're watching now the explosion of quality women's college basketball. There are great players all over the country, and they just, you know, I would like to see the league expand. I think this is the perfect time with the excitement around college basketball, the fact that that Vegas and New York are super teams. You know, it's probably a good time to expand and kind of capitalize on the popularity right now.
Yeah, I've heard that they are expanding to 16 teams by 25. Have you heard anything about that?
That is the plan, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, I think Bay Area is a natural.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, Toronto would be a natural. And then I'm not sure where else they'd go. You know, and listen, it's not like every WNBA team is successful right now, but that's just the nature of pro sports. Bad teams don't draw. But I think they can build something right now.
Yeah, boy, capitalize right at the zenith of its popularity. You just had over 18 million people watch the college national championship game. So it would seem the perfect time to expand the number of teams in WNBA for sure. In the NBA, the play-in tournament is tonight and tomorrow. Well, it's this week, basically. The Timberwolves aren't on the docket until Saturday. Some interesting matchups. I was hoping it would be Lakers and Golden State right away. We may not get that as they didn't wind up in the same pairing. But, you know, just having those two teams trying to get their way into the West, pretty interesting.
Fascinating. And, you know, the Warriors still have something. You know, they're not good, they're not great, but they still have something. The Lakers are capable of going on a run if Anthony Davis is healthy and playing well. LeBron's had an incredible year. Mm-hmm. The Kings are dangerous, although disappointing this year, I think. I just don't think they play enough defense. And the Pelicans, you know, talking about the proverbial team nobody wants to play, they're just hard to match up with. Although it's been interesting, some teams lately have been backing off Zion and just daring him to shoot and just guarding the paint. And, you know, if you're the right personnel, that seems to be working a little bit. Whereas, you know, most teams like the Wolves want to man up on him, and he just goes right by you and dunks on you and gets you in foul trouble. So, just so many. I mean, that's going to be the great thing about these playoffs is the matchups are going to be different game by game, round by round.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And for the Timberwolves, they wind up with the Suns. You know, 0-3 against the Suns this season. I mean, you can't take that necessarily forward, but it's not an easy matchup for them at all.
No, and they're going to have to get more physical inside, impose their will inside. They're going to have to cover the three-point line better. They're going to need to get Towns up to speed quickly. And you know what? Edwards did not play very well against the Suns in the regular season. And you know, the most obvious thing we can say about the NBA playoffs is your best player better play well if you're in advance. And they need Edwards to get rolling here.
Yeah. And the NBA seems to be increasing in popularity. The Timberwolves sold out every game this year, and attendance up 10% across the league. So people are going to games.
It's a great league. Mm-hmm. It really is. There is so much talent. There's so much spectacular talent. There's so much offensive capability. So many spectacular plays made on a nightly basis. You know, great big personalities, great personalities, great teams, you know, great controversies, mm-hmm. players who aren't afraid to speak their mind, aren't afraid to trash talk. The NBA is as good now as it's ever been.
Yeah, I agree. The skill level is so high.
It's
unbelievable. My college basketball-loving friends always point, no defense in the NBA, look at all the scoring. And I just say, it's because the offense is so spectacular. Now, the rules have been changed over the years to benefit offensive players more, but it's the skill of the players in the league that lead to 140-point games.
The reason college basketball fans like college basketball is because every basket is a victory.
Right.
If a college basketball player makes a shot, it's a big deal, and you get to like act like it's a big deal. The NBA, these guys shoot off-balance contested threes and swish them. Mm-hmm. They make it look so easy that if you don't know what you're watching, you think it's just bad defense.
Yeah.
It's not bad defense. It's that if you don't have your fingers in somebody's eye, he's going to knock down the shot.
It is. It's just the talent level is off the charts. How they're coaching these guys and teaching them to shoot. I mean, you just don't see broken shots in the NBA much anymore. These guys are really locked in.
Yes, and you know, somebody with the Wolves was pointing out to me that they were looking up an old NBA All-Star game box score from back in the day. I can't remember what year it was, and the teams like combined to go like 2-for-7 from three-point line or something like that. And now, you know, when the three-point line was put in the NBA, it was a desperation catch-up, you know, end-of-the-game stratagem. That's just it. Yep. One part of your offense. Now these guys are running off picks and shooting threes.
It's crazy.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and stepping back. Sometimes
stepping
you'll
back.
See, look at Caitlin Clark. She has that step back move. It's the double step back. She goes back 6 feet and fires it up, and that's really become prevalent.
Yeah, and not only have you seen a transformation in skill and technique, but you also have just daring. These mm-hmm. people are not afraid to take that shot. I mean, and let's face it, back in the day, you get benched if you took that shot.
Right, that's right. Jim, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Suhan, brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort.